Get back to me.
Senator Olson, the chair does not recognize you. Sit down.
In spending limits.
Powers that be are in a leadership meeting, and so they drew straws and I lost, and here I am. We will be addressing at Senate Bill 311, the insurance and workers' comp revision, postponed until Monday. Our SB 357, the appropriation capital projects, SB 364, limit state aid for mental health care, and SB 278, labor and workforce development fees. For anyone that's here for those, we apologize, but they will be addressed Monday. Senator Dyson.
Mr. Chairman, is it your intention to move SB 311 today?
It would not be my intention. It may be the co-chair's intention. My marching orders were to address the discussion and take public testimony and hopefully prepare the ground so that they could make a decision as to whether the bill should be moved or not.
And you always do what you're told, right?
Up till this moment.
Thank you.
And for the record, let's acknowledge that Senator Dyson, Senator Olson, and Senator Hoffman are with us, as well as myself, Bundy.
Mr. Chairman.
And Senator Hoffman, you had, seeking the floor?
Yes. Does that include passing Senator Olson and my amendments this morning?
the batteries, I'm sure, is the only thing that's the problem. In any case, we do have some folks that would like to address the SB 311. If we have nothing more to come before us, we will turn to 311. Here in Juneau, we have Doug Wolliver, who lives in the very best part of Alaska and has some of the brightest children that Alaska's ever produced.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Doug Wolliver. I'm the administrative attorney for the Alaska court system. As is our practice, the court doesn't take a position on the merits of the bill. We'll leave the decisions, public policy decisions, up to you on this. My only purpose in testifying is to explain the impact that one portion of this bill is likely to have on the court, and that's the portion that allows for appeals from the agency to bypass the Superior Court and go directly to the Supreme Court. For the past several years, there have been an average of about 36 workers' comp cases that are appealed to the Superior Court, to the court system as a whole. 27 of those, on average, are resolved at the Superior Court level and are not further appealed to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court takes about 9 of those cases each year. The court doesn't believe that the changes made by this bill are likely to have much of an impact on the total number of cases that come to the court system as a whole. And there are several reasons for this, and those reasons are the reasons that explain why people appeal from administrative agencies. And you will always see appeals from administrative agencies, regardless of the competency of the agency. And some of those appeals come because reasonable minds disagree on an individual case. It may be that either side could have won, and the losing side decides to appeal. We have appeals from even our best and most experienced Superior Court judges, and we'll always get appeals even from the Appeals Commission. The second, each year there are always a handful of novel legal issues that are raised in the workers' comp setting, and those cases will continue to come to the Supreme Court for final resolution. Another important reason that people appeal from administrative agencies is that some people simply want their day in court. Not everyone trusts the administrative process. Again, even if the administrative process is very competent and fair, some people don't trust the administrative agency process itself, and they will continue to appeal because they'll want a judge to decide their case. And finally, each year there are always a handful of people who are simply tenacious, and they're going to appeal until they run out of time or money. So we expect, even if with passage of this bill in its current form, that we'll probably see about the same number of cases as we've always seen. The difference will be that they'll all go to the Supreme Court rather than going to the Superior Court first. One of the reasons given for bypassing the Superior Court is that if you bypass the Superior Court and go directly to the Supreme Court, you're going to save time in getting a final resolution of those cases. And for some cases, that will be true. For those 9 cases a year that normally do go to the Supreme Court, you'll save time because you'll skip the Superior Court step. Those cases will be resolved more quickly under this bill. However, that's only about 25% of the cases that come to the court system. As I mentioned earlier, about 27 of the 36 cases that come to the court system don't go any further than the Superior Court. Those cases under this bill will take more time, and they'll take more time because the Superior Court can resolve cases more quickly than can the Supreme Court. The Superior Court is a committee of one. It's when the judge decides his or her opinion, they write it up, he or she writes it up, and that's the end of it. Of course, the Supreme Court is a more deliberative process. It's a committee of 5. Opinions are drafted, circulated, commented upon, redrafted, recirculated. That process, by design, takes more time. So under this bill, you will save time on 25% of the cases that come to the court system, but you're likely to add time to 75%, the remaining 75%. Court, we don't object to this process, but what we do ask for, and the reason for our fiscal note is, we would like some extra resources to handle these extra cases that come to the Supreme Court. And what we're asking for in this bill is a staff attorney with expertise in workers' comp law to work up these cases for the court to help speed their resolution along. We don't want the Supreme Court to be the slowest part of the entire process. Well, it's going to be the slowest part of the whole process anyway. We'd like to make sure it's not slower than it needs to be to resolve these cases. We're also asking for an extra clerk for filing, extra paperwork, computer work, and administrative assistant for the court and for the law clerk. And remember, too, that right now, one of the important roles the Superior Court plays in this process, as in any others, is they absorb potential appeals before they get to the Supreme Court. If this law produces more appeals, they'll all go to the Supreme Court. The Superior Court isn't there to weed out cases. If in a couple of years you change the law again and results in an increase in appeals, again, they all go to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court is the court least able to absorb increases in cases because it's the same people have to make the decisions. We don't add on another court. We don't hire on pro tem judges as we can at the Superior Court level to help absorb cases. It's the same body that has to resolve them. So we don't object to the bill. We just ask for the resources to be able to handle the increased caseload. And that's all I have, and I'd be willing to ask questions.
Senator Dyson has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually have 2 general questions. Doug, I appreciate your expertise. Do the case decisions become precedent-setting, and the court decisions in either court, Superior or Supreme, and therefore guide policy and practice decisions of the Board or Commission for the future?
Through the Chair, Senator Dyson, Supreme Court opinions set precedent in any areas where they resolve a dispute. The Superior Court does not. Although in these cases, a lot of the cases, even at the Supreme Court level, are not establishing unique new legal rules. A lot of those cases, if you read the Supreme Court decisions, they're like a lot of family law cases. They're basically pretty fact-specific, and they're not really establishing useful precedent. But the Supreme Court sets precedent. The Superior Court does not.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. I'm always uncomfortable about my ignorance, particularly in this area. Would you discuss a little bit and explain to me what this de novo means and the pros and cons of that portion of the bill?
Let me interject that we'll have people from the administration that will also be discussing those issues, but we'd be interested in your opinion, Mr. Wallner.
From the court's end of things, the Supreme Court reviews de novo the Superior Court's opinions.
Say it again.
From the, this gets a little convoluted, but the Supreme Court reviews de novo the Superior Court opinion in a workers' comp case, and that means that it's like the Superior Court decision never happened. They look past the Superior Court decision, and they just look at the agency's final action. It's like in election cases that you just went through where the Superior Court had a long, exhaustive trial and everything establishing the record for redistricting. The Supreme Court looks at the record but doesn't defer to the Superior Court's expertise on any areas. It's the same in workers' comp cases or any other agency appeal from an administrative agency. The Supreme Court, like the Superior Court, looks to the agency decision. And the Superior Court and the Supreme Court defer to the agency decision, and that's where they have the substantial evidence standard, so that the Supreme Court and the Superior Court will defer to the agency on its in areas of expertise. It doesn't second-guess factual findings and whatnot, unless there's simply very little evidence to support what they've come up with, which is not typically the case. What they do review de novo are legal issues. And the Superior Court and the Supreme Court will substitute its own judgment on legal interpretations. But on factual findings, they defer to the agency.
Mr. Willover, would it be oversimplification to say that de novo is you go back to step one and start all over again?
Mr. Chairman, that's accurate. The only difference is they don't take new testimony. It is based on the record that was established below. But that's right. They relook at all the issues.
Senator Dyson.
What does de novo mean?
It's a Latin term. I should have looked it up. But it basically means that they relook at all of the evidence and reweigh all of the evidence and substitute their own judgment on that evidence. They don't defer to the lower body's interpretation of the evidence.
If I may continue. So if in a workers' comp, between the time that the lawyer, whatever, made a decision and the thing finally gets to Supreme or Superior Court, and the person's physical condition had greatly deteriorated, therefore substantiating the worker's claim that, you know, that he was hurt a lot worse than what the board agreed, can either court look at the new evidence in fact that in coming to their decision?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, perhaps Mr. Nordstrand knows the answer to that better than I. There may be some escape valves for compelling and new evidence. I'm not aware. I don't know the answer to that. I know the general rule is that new evidence is not taken in the appeal process. But there may be, and I don't know the answer to this, there may be an escape valve for particularly compelling circumstances.
It would seem to me respectfully that particularly when we're dealing with a worker's ability to either, you know, live fully as before the accident or to make a living, that that would be valuable information. Can you tell me why in these cases that new evidence, what's the history of that tradition or that policy?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, it's the same history and policy basically in most all appeals, which is what the appeal process does is look to see if, based on the evidence that was available at the time, the lower body made an error.
I see.
And the appeal itself is not a trial-type setting, typically. You're not taking new evidence, hearing new witnesses, retrying the case. You're just looking at the record and saying, did the body below make a mistake, legally or factually?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We can ask Mr. Nordstrand to address that, too. Other questions for Mr. Willover? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I look at what's going on here, if you can walk me through it or make sure that I've got the right steps, is that after a person makes a claim that it goes and is heard by a hearing officer and then would go from the hearing officer to the Supreme Court, Alaska Supreme Court? Is that true?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the administration can speak to that part better than I, but my understanding is it goes from I think the current version of the bill has the board as part of the process again. It goes from there, if you appeal, to their appeals commission within the agency, and from there, if you appealed, it would go to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, let's see if we might defer that to Mr. Nordstrom when we get him here.
If I could continue, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Right now it seems like the courts have been awfully clogged, and how do we make sure that the Supreme Court, I mean, it looks like we're skipping a bunch of steps here that are normally in place for due process. How do we make sure that the Supreme Court does not get clogged up? Because as you pointed out, these are people that are there. You can't hire any more like you can at the Superior Court level. You can put pro tem judges in there, but you can't obviously at the Supreme Court level.
Well, through the chair, Senator Olson, that is a concern. We will see more cases at the Supreme Court. We would, like our fiscal note, ask for some additional staff so that it doesn't create too much of a backlog. But in the end, we still have cases that the Supreme Court is going to have to decide that they would not otherwise have to decide.
Last question, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
We have or at least recently, after statehood, there's been a Court of Appeals established. Why aren't they in the picture?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the Court of Appeals is only for criminal cases. We don't have an intermediate Court of Appeals for civil cases.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Wolliver, and it'd be the chair's intent to take public testimony both here in Juneau and on teleconference, and then ask the administration, Mr. Lozanki and Mr. Nordstrom, to address specific questions about the bill, unless the committee needs information from them right now. Senator Hoffman.
I wonder if you could expand on your comments regarding savings of 25% under this legislation to the courts and adding time of 75%. What are the costs related to each of those percentages?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I don't have a cost figure exactly on those, but what we know is that right now 75% of the cases that come to the court system as a whole stop at the Superior Court level. 25% of those cases, and these are workers' comp cases, 25% of those do get a further appeal to the Supreme Court. Under this bill, assuming that the number of appeals from the agency itself don't change, and we don't have any reason to believe that they will all go to the Supreme Court. And that's where the cost that we are estimating is just the cost of additional staff to help the court handle the increase so that these cases don't take an unnecessary amount of time, and importantly, they don't end up slowing down the rest of the Supreme Court's caseload.
Well,
Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, that brings up a question. If additional cases, since the Supreme Court can only handle so many cases, they're going to have to decide, and they may decide that they will take up more cases as a result of this legislation that are directly related to workers' comp, and possibly less cases in another area, but it may be reversed, and it's hard to say so, because the court's time is fixed. And I guess we don't know what that might be.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the court can't decline cases. It's not like the Supreme Court that says, okay, we're going to look at these and we just won't look at 90% of the cases that people ask the U.S. Supreme Court to look at. The Supreme Court has discretionary review over most issues. For our Supreme Court, we don't have the ability to turn away cases, with the exception of criminal appeals, which are almost all handled by the Court of Appeals, the Court of Criminal Appeals. So if we get more cases to the Supreme Court, we just have to resolve more cases. We don't have the option to turn them away.
Thank you, Mr. Wolliver. Let me go off net now to Linda Hall, Director of Division of Insurance. Are you with us, Ms. Hall?
Senator Bundy.
Yes. Did you have some comments for us?
I would hold my comments until after you take public testimony, as I did have an opportunity to testify yesterday. I do have some comments on questions that were answered, but I would like to see you get your public testimony in, and I will defer to the two administrative representatives that are there, Deputy Attorney General Nordstrand.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
And off-net, Steve Constantino.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Steve Constantino. I'm an attorney in our state. I've been so for 20 years. I've lived around our state. I've served as a hearing officer on the Workers' Compensation Board, and I currently represent injured workers before the Workers' Compensation Board and in front of the courts. There are portions of this bill that I support, and there seems to be a general consensus in favor of, and that is the insurance reforms that will help address the crisis that we have in the Alaska Guarantee Fund. In addition, there seems to be a consensus that the position of hearing officer, the people who actually sit on the panels and decide cases, that those positions should be upgraded so that we get both competent people, and I'm not suggesting the board members aren't competent, but there is not really an incentive to stay as a hearing officer. As a result, there's a lot of turnover, and we don't have the institutional memory that perhaps we would if the positions were upgraded. I would like to speak strongly against the changes to how claims are handled, in particular the de novo review provisions of this new bureaucracy that the administration is supporting. I listened yesterday with great care to Senator Hoffman's questions and the responses that he got from members of the business community and the administration. And Senator Hoffman went right to the heart of the matter. His question was, how much is going to be saved and how is it going to be saved? The answers from the administration and from the representatives of business were, we hope it will save costs, we expect it to save costs, it may save costs. I sympathize with their hopes and expectations. We would all like to reduce costs, but I don't see that the institutional changes will save costs. I think, in fact, that they will increase costs, both to government and to business and to insurers. The cost to government, you have fiscal notes in front of you. I believe that Mr. Willever, on behalf of the court system, has articulated the reasons why the court system is going to incur additional costs as a result of this. I think that, if anything, those costs are understated. It is my impression from being in the system that people trust Superior Court judges, want their review, and that you'll end up with more appeals to the Supreme Court from the bureaucracy than you currently have if people have an opportunity to have their case reviewed by a Superior Court judge. There is an implication that Superior Court judges either give short shrift to workers' compensation cases or lack the expertise necessary to make those decisions. I see no basis for that. In my day-to-day experience, I think that the court system that handles the most critical, serious, and important conflicts in our society is certainly able to handle workers' compensation cases. I believe that there will be no streamlining of litigation. I, in fact, believe that instituting a new de novo review through a new bureaucracy will actually increase litigation costs because, as Senator Dyson queried, what is de novo review? It's essentially a second bite at the apple. Admittedly, the current proposed legislation does not allow the appellate commission to take new testimony. However, it allows the commission to reweigh the testimony or the evidence that's taken. This is, in essence, a second bite of the apple. There is almost no litigant who believes that he didn't get the fair trial or he didn't get an adequate hearing or they just didn't believe his evidence that is not going to appeal. I think you're going to see a dramatic increase in the number of appeals from the board. Currently, the board makes the final decision on the weight of evidence and who's credible. The proposed legislation would leave credibility determinations as they are now, but it would allow the bureaucracy to reweigh the evidence and reach a different decision without ever hearing the evidence. Senator Dyson, I believe, requested some input on the question of who would, whether there was a safety valve for different evidence. There currently is a safety valve in our system. The Superior Court has the power to make de novo rulings and actually has the power to take evidence. It is almost never exercised because the board does an adequate job of taking evidence. That's the safety valve. There is no safety valve in the proposed system. The current institutions are serving our state well, and if it's necessary to streamline them, and I agree with Director Lisanki's concerns about consistency, if in fact the goal is consistency in decision making, having all of the workers' compensation panels follow the law as set down by the courts, it is a relatively simple matter. Currently, all the Commissioner of Labor sits on every one of the hearing panels. He sits through designees who are these hearing officers. If the goal of this legislation is to get consistent rulings, to have the board follow the decisions of the courts, it's a simple matter for the Commissioner of Labor to instruct his designees, who sit as one of three members on the panel, but are basically the people who advise the lay members concerning the law. It's a simple matter for the Commissioner of Labor to instruct his hearing officers to follow Superior Court and Supreme Court decisions. There will always be cases where disputed issues of law are decided differently by different Superior Court judges. Currently, the board participates in every appeal and has a right to participate in every appeal. They almost never do, but if there is a dispute between two superior courts regarding what the law is on a certain segment of workers' compensation, the board and the director can, it's a simple matter for them to instruct the Attorney General who represents the Workers' Compensation Board to appeal that decision to the Superior Court and get it resolved. The mechanisms are in place to achieve all the goals that the legislation is purported to achieve without any additional costs, without creating a new bureaucracy, without distorting the decision-making process that's currently going on, and without raising litigation costs by giving litigants a second bite at the apple. Again, I want to, there is an amendment sponsored by Senator Hoffman. My information is that it's amendment number one, which would basically upgrade the position of hearing officer in the current system. I believe this is a good bill. I believe that it is an important bill amendment that would achieve much of what the administration is attempting to achieve through their tinkering with a system which has served our state, I believe, very well for almost 50 years.
Can I ask you to summarize, please?
In summary, there will be no demonstrable savings to business or to the insurance industry. There will be no savings to government. There will be detrimental effects to injured workers. I believe that it will increase litigation costs. And the current mechanism, there are mechanisms in place to achieve all of the goals that the legislation is proposed to achieve. Thank you for hearing my comments.
Thank you. I have a question, never having had to avail myself to a workman comp attorney. Do you bill by the hour or is it a contingency fee?
We are prohibited by statute from accepting money from an injured worker. All of our fees are paid contingently. So, there is a provision for minimum statutory fees, and there is a provision for reasonable fees. We are only paid if our client prevails in the litigation, and then our fees are controlled by the Workers' Compensation Board, and to my knowledge, there is no proposal to change that system.
Okay, thank you. Senator Olson has a question.
Mr. Constantino, if I can interpret your testimony, you are in favor of the bill except for the committee's ability to go and have de novo review of the case. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman.
That was actually a yes or no answer.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. In Fairbanks, we have John Juki.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is John Juki, and I would like to say I agree with Steve Constantino 100%. I have just a few comments that I would like to make. First and foremost, I've not been able to get an opinion of savings from anyone in the Attorney General's office, employer attorneys, or insurance carriers to estimate any proposed savings in employer premiums as a result of diminishing the board's current power or creating an appeals commission at what's been estimated at a cost of nearly $1 million a year to the state. It just doesn't seem appropriate for me for the appeals commission to have more power than a superior court judge, and on top of that, be appointed and not even referred by the Judicial Council as superior court judges currently are. For the Appeals Commission to be able to substitute personal judgment in place of facts that the board finds during their hearings just doesn't seem fair at all, especially when it gets appealed to the Supreme Court, when all they can look at is what the Appeals Commission has done. They don't even take into account what has happened at the board level. I've got a lot of problems with this bill because the AG's office and whoever else helped draft this bill say it comes from the Model Act. Well, I've got the Model Act, and I've read through it, and I've compared it to this bill, and there are some points from the Model Act that are in there, but there's also a lot of totally new language that has been drafted for this bill that doesn't show up anywhere in any state act. Some of this comes from Oregon, some of it comes from Illinois. The honest truth of the matter is it's a very mismatched, unproven act that should not be enacted. Mr. Wolver talked on the amount of appeals and what that would do to the court systems. And from some of the data that I've been able to find, only 2% of the cases that are appealed ever get changed. And from what everyone in the legal community tells me, that is really an outstanding rate. So to make all of these changes, take any power or authority away from the boards, create an appeals commission, just makes very little sense in the overall picture. But I would agree that the first 7 sections of this bill dealing with the Guarantee Association should be enacted. And also sections 37 and 38 making a penalty, an enforceable penalty for employers that do not carry workers' comp insurance should also be enacted. But the Appeals Commission is a real boondoggle, in my opinion. And that would be all I have to comment.
Okay, thank you. Would you support, then, increased penalties for workers' comp fraud as well?
Yes, sir, I would.
Okay, thank you. Going back off net, Joe Camarides.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is Joe Calamarides, and I'm an attorney that has practiced law before the Alaska Workers' Comp Board for 27 years representing injured workers. I've been involved in various processes with the Workers' Comp Act since that time, and I've reviewed this bill. I would like the committee to set back for a minute and look at what is happening with the current system by using the figures from the annual reports. And I'm going to refer to the annual report of 2001. I have not looked at the 2002 annual report. In 2001, we had 28,174 reported injuries, which is consistent with the previous 10 years. It has been about 28 to 30,000 injuries a year. Claims filed, a claim is a formal document filed before the board indicating to the board that something's wrong with the process of the payment of the injury, payment for the injury. Claims filed in 2001 were 1,198 claims. Now that is fairly consistent with the previous 10 years, about 1,000 claims a year are filed. So out of 28,000 injuries, we have about 1,000 actual formal contested claims. So 27,000 injuries are taken care of by the adjusters and by the injured workers without any dispute. Decisions before the, and that's about 5%, decisions before the board in the year 2003 actually filed reported decisions were 310. Now that's the highest it's been. But if you go back, it's between 200 to 300 decisions. And that is about 1.9% of the injuries which were reported in 2001. So actually 1.9% go to the board for a resolution of the dispute. Out of those 310 last year, 36 appeals went to the Superior Court. We are now down to 1/8 of 1%. Of the actual reported injuries that actually make it to the Superior Court. And as you heard today, of those 36, 9 go to the Supreme Court and 27 are resolved. What the bill proposes to do by establishing a commission is for 30, if we took a look at those 36 appeals, which cost the board nothing or virtually nothing at the present time, you're asking for a fiscal note of $566,600, approximately $15,738 per appeal that presently goes before the Superior Court. That's new money. And the question is, and this is the question I address to you, is this absolutely needed? And the answer is no. If the current system resolves almost 99% of the reported injuries by the time it gets to the board, I'd say that's a good result. And that's the way the system's supposed to work. This proposal, I think it's going to increase costs and increase litigation. And I would agree with Mr. Constantino, it's just not necessary. And that's all I have to say.
All right, thank you. Coming back here to Juneau, Pam LeBeau. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Pam LeBeau, and I'm president of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce. And we are in favor of Senate Bill 311. One of the most costly expenses to business is workers' comp, and small businesses have to have it, big business, everyone has to have it, and it is needed, and, you know, we're glad for the system. But this can be controlled by the laws, the design of the system, and by...
Pull the mic a little closer, please.
Okay. And by state, by the actions of the state. I recently heard, and I'm not absolutely certain of the exact figures, but it was at a speech that I heard from a senator from California who was talking about how the California workers' compensation system has become so out of hand that recently the state of Idaho ran an ad in California newspapers to attract business away from Idaho, away from California into Idaho, pointing out that for a 200-person high-tech industry, 200-employee high-tech industry, that in California the cost was something on the order of $400,000 in workers' comp, and in Idaho it was less than $100,000. And again, I'd want to check the figures, but that was generally it. And you may have observed that one of the things California is doing is reworking its system. We are wanting to avoid that problem here in Alaska, and it's approaching that. We have a member of the state chamber who was telling me just yesterday that he has a 50-employee business, and his workers' comp right now is like $98,000. Well, that's approaching that is essentially that California figure. And one of the reasons, business doesn't believe the present system is fair. If you have no consistency of decisions, if you have no predictability, which you don't under the present system, then insurance companies are apt to cut their losses and not pursue the appeal because of the time-consuming effort and the additional cost that's going to be involved with no idea what your chances are of prevailing in an appeal. And so, of course, those costs get passed on to business in the price of our workers' compensation insurance policies. And worse yet, and the most dangerous thing facing Alaska, is the number of carriers that are going to be willing to do business in this state. And so it's really a critical thing for the business community that the system be viewed as fair and predictable and reasonable. We believe that the revisions proposed here are fairer and more reasonable and predictable. The main thing that we were in favor of in the original bill was the fact that we had taken the lay involvement of the panel out and had professionals who were knowledgeable in workers' compensation law were the ones who were going to be making the decisions on these hearings. Well, the ad hoc group that we protested to, by the way, there's three elements of the workers' compensation system, three very key players. One, of course, being the labor community, and one being the business community, and one being the state. And so the state and labor went off and had a two-day ad hoc meeting and made all these decisions and brought it all back, and the only one left out of the picture was business, the ones who pay the bills. So we were not happy with that. However, and what they did trade away was the no lay people on the panel. Now, again, the original hearing has lay people on it. So the benefit is that there's more highly skilled, highly trained hearing officers. And the fact that we have the de novo review at the appeal commission level makes it acceptable to us. And so we support it with the de novo appeal, because otherwise we're right back where we were, where business does not feel that they are that they have the level of predictability and accountability that they will have under the newly revised proposed system.
Thank you very much. Senator Hoffman has a question.
Well, how do you come to the conclusion that business thinks that they don't support, they support this legislation?
How, through the chair, Senator
is
Hoffman.
The chamber or business?
The chamber members.
So the chamber members. Because I'm a businessman. I have three businesses, and no one has asked me.
Well, I'll talk to you about a membership.
Oh, you're saying that the chamber supports it, not business.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, yes, that is true, but the chamber is the...
is an organization.
A very...
But they don't represent all businesses.
700 businesses throughout the state and have a very good representation in state business.
And the other question is, more predictability. They want more predictability. How is that accomplished in this legislation?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman. Through the precedent-setting decisions that are possible through the appeals panel, the appeals commission system that is within this law, you have case law. In the current system, there are more than 300 combinations that you can have for a hearing, and that's there's no consistency in the decisions. And when they come to the Supreme Court, there's several Supreme Court judges who can hear the cases, they don't know what the other Supreme Courts have decided on these cases, on similar cases. There's just no predictability because it's not at the professional level that it should be.
But therein lies the question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Therein lies the question. We've just heard from three attorneys that have, it sounds like, over half a century of, I'd say 50 years of practicing in workman's comp, and they say this law is going to cause for more appeals to the Supreme Court. It seems to me that there's going to be, because of that, the people that are actually trying these cases, it's not, and these people are doing this as their livelihood, and the businesses, if I had workman's comp claims, that might occupy 1% of my time. So the people that are most knowledgeable, it would seem to me, are the attorneys that are practicing and may not be the business industry. And they're saying that it's going to be potentially less predictable because more cases are going to be going to the Supreme Court.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, these three attorneys that we just heard from have all their practice, though, representing the workers. They're not on the other side of the issue. I'm not saying that they don't have the expertise, but what I am saying is that I'm sure that we could have three attorneys from the other side of the coin who could testify to what I'm saying. The point of law, the idea of having laws is that they're rules that everyone follows and that they do bring consistency to the actions of our society. And that's all we're saying is that by putting this into a more professional realm where you have consistency in case decisions and one court to another understands what rules were followed.
Mr. Chairman.
Perhaps if they got paid by the hour, they wouldn't mind the additional appeals, but maybe the contingency has an impact on that.
Mr. Chairman, maybe we should hear from those people that you're talking about. Why didn't they come forward and testify?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I'm only here to testify for business. I don't control who else comes before this panel.
We're going to take a brief recess on. We've lost Barbara Huff Tuckness. We will come back to her if she gets back to us. And Mr. Lozanki and Mr. You would have lost Mr. Nordstrom as well. Oh, there he is. Mr. Nordstrand.
Thank you, Senator.
For the record, please.
For the record, my name is Scott Nordstrand. I'm the Deputy Attorney General for the Civil Division of the State Department of Law.
Let me interrupt just for a minute, because I did want you fellows to bat clean up. And I see Barbara's back, so if you would indulge me and let me call on Barbara first.
Is although it? I wouldn't mind being clean up,
Mr. Chairman, I do have some questions of the previous testimony on the previous testimony that was given by the previous witness.
We'll get to that.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee that are at least here this morning, and I am a little concerned. This is probably
for the record, please.
For the record, my name is Barbara Huff-Tuckness. I'm the Director of Governmental and Legislative Relations for Teamsters Local 959.
Thank you.
This is probably one of the most important pieces of legislation, I believe, that's been introduced in the state of Alaska in probably 50 years with respect to injured workers out there and the potential impact. And I am a little concerned that we don't have a full committee as we're going through this very, very important testimony, and I'll just put that on the record. And I know that we've got very busy schedules right now, and that probably also bothers us with the 62-page bill at end of session that we're trying to move through the system. For the record, we are opposed to Senate Bill 311 in its current form. Well, many of you are probably aware that this particular bill in front of you has gone through several changes, and we appreciate, on the record, the time that this administration has given to at least going through and listening to some of those change, some of the concerns that we have raised through this particular bill. Again, we don't believe that there's been anything in this bill that's been a give back. It's been improving what we consider to be a very bad bill that has been made with some of these changes a little better. All of us have seen or felt the increased cost of workers' comp insurance. Our local and our trust combined, we actually have over 60 employees that we also pay workers' comp insurance on. So I guess I come before this committee not only on behalf of our concern for the injured workers out there, but as an employer also. And we also are looking at these costs and continue to pay, as does any other employer within the state of Alaska. Therefore, we have a stake in whatever the outcome of any new legislation that's put forward as an employer, as well as on behalf of those injured workers throughout the state. Workers' comp insurance was put in place to assist workers injured on the job. For this insurance, the injured worker has given up their right to take their particular claims to court and to file accordingly for whatever recovery of damages. The basic objectives with respect to the workers' comp, and I think that the members of the committee should probably be at least reminded of those, was to provide a swift and certain income as well as medical benefits to the victim of a work accident or income benefits to their dependents if indeed there was an actual death, to provide a single remedy and reduce court delays, cost, and workloads arising out of personal injury litigation, to also relieve public and private charities of financial drains incidental to uncompensated industrial accidents, and to eliminate payment fees to lawyers and witnesses, as well as time-consuming trials and appeals. And I think those are some very, very important points that need to be considered as you deliberate on this particular bill in front of you today. While some have stated that the system is broke, there have been no statistics introduced that at least have been presented to us through the numerous meetings that would support such an allegation. For example, over a five-year period of time from 1999 through 2003, The current workers' comp board issued 1,363 decisions and orders. These DNOs that were appealed out of that total was 189. Now, this is over a five-year period of time. The percentage on that was 13.2% of the 1,363 decisions and orders that were actually appealed. Those that actually ended up in Supreme Court was about 25. And I think that there was a number of 2%. The number that I've actually got was 1.8%. I think we're probably well within the margin of error out there. I am sure that there are many administrative law systems out there that would like to boast such numbers in any system. Again, from a statistical perspective, we do not believe that the numbers out there show that we have a broken system per se. In fact, probably looking another step further with the decisions that have come out, those numbers show a 50-50 injured worker decision versus employer decisions out there. With that being said, there are some good provisions in this bill. For example, the first seven sections, and I think there was earlier testimony regarding this, we do believe are good improvements. We believe this will keep the Alaska Insurance Guarantee Association solvent, and that, we believe, is good not only for the injured workers, but for the employers around the state as well. The bill also increases the qualifications of the hearing officers. We support this. I believe that currently on staff of the approximate eight, there are probably two that currently are not members of the Alaska Bar Association. If this bill were to pass, that would be a requirement of all the hearing officers. And there is a provision that would allow a period of time for those that currently are not members of the Alaska Bar to become so. Hearing officers under this bill will be tasked to instruct the panel members as to particular points of law. This is done, as it's been explained to us in various meetings, would be done in a similar manner that a judge would instruct a jury. We support this. While we believe that it definitely has taken away the power of the board, what you have done is put into this bill a system with the hearing officers at a much lower level instead of that process being looked at either the Superior Court or the Supreme Court level. You have actually given that authority to the hearing officers and instructing the panel on those particular points of law. We support that. While it has taken away the power of the board, we believe that that should indeed in and of itself probably develop some consistency with the decisions that come out through the process. Under this bill, the hearing officers, as was mentioned earlier by another witness in testimony, their pay has been increased under this bill. We support that. We believe, as testified earlier, that would actually promote some consistency within the department. We also believe that will help in going through the hearing panels with the board members and decisions coming out in a more consistent and I guess if that is an issue out there, probably would develop some more consistency with staff that continues to be employed and probably the most expert in workers' comp law, since that is all that these individuals are doing, and a substantial, in fact, every case that's heard would go before the hearing officers. The bill further requires that all three members of the hearing panel, which is comprised of a hearing officer and two members of the workers' comp board, would have to be present in conducting a hearing. We support this particular change, and we hope that if we're not able to have a member of the panel that's present fiscally, that would actually, through a telephonic process, be available to them as well. But we do believe, again, that particular change would help in developing some continuity and some consistency, if indeed that's the issue that we're trying to get at here. The bill separates the administrative and adjudicative functions within the department, and it actually formally recognizes a workers' comp division, which, I mean, for years, myself personally, it was a known entity. Under current statute, your workers' comp division functions are a work product of the board, and the board just traditionally delegates that, at least as we understand it, delegates those particular functions to the division. Under this bill, that actually would be separated out. You would have your adjudicative functions done in one area and your administrative functions in another. We support that. Let's see, while the division has been doing the work, it has not been codified in state statute. Under this bill, the division will also have the ability to fine employers who do not purchase workers' compensation insurance. As an employer, we are mandated to purchase workers' comp insurance as any other employer out there. And I guess for the record, I would also comment on our earlier comment that was made with respect to the cost. Our workers' comp insurance is not anywhere as expensive as our medical insurance costs are right now, and I'm sure that that's probably true of a lot of other employers out there. The only difference is we don't have a choice with workers' comp whether we provide it or not. With the medical insurance, the employers do have a choice whether they offer that to their employees. Additionally, there is an area of the bill that we don't support, and I think it has been narrowed down, hopefully somewhat succinctly, that we can present the issue. It's been discussed with numerous individuals that have previously testified here, and that gets into the appeals committee. Under this bill, it proposes to replace the Superior Court, which is an already existing level of court function, a cost that has been incurred by the state of Alaska for, I guess, since the time of our existence. It's not an additional cost in taking these appeals from the board into the Superior Court unless they've got a case overload, and then at that time they'd be looking at bringing some additional help on in that area. Under this bill, the Superior Court level of government would be replaced with a brand new level of government. You're still going to be paying the cost of your Superior Court judges. Those particular caseloads, I guess you'd have a case or two taken off of each and every one of the Superior Court judges, which they would probably appreciate, but it probably does little to really benefit them from a caseload perspective either. You're still paying the cost of those Superior Court judges. In addition, under this bill, you've got a three-member appeals committee. My understanding, at least numbers that have been thrown out, anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million for three attorneys appointed by the governor to hear cases. The argument has been made that this would be, I guess, in essence, a quasi-judicial type commission, although they definitely fall under the administrative, not the judicial process, because we had suggested that they be appointed through the Judicial Review Council, and that was outright actually rejected, and the argument being that this is an administrative appeals commission and therefore should not be subject to such appointment process. Under this bill, they would be appointed by the governor. They would be serving a five-year period of time. And then, of course, you've got staggered appointments going on throughout the year. With the staggeredness, I think, again, you are going to be losing, even through this appeals commission, continuity, because you will not have an individual or the three-member individuals continuing to sit for a more than five-year period of time at the table in reviewing these cases. So again, I think it kind of sort of flies in the face of what your continuity or your consistency is. But at the same time, you're bringing on another level of government. You are increasing your cost in upwards of $5 to $1 million, and who knows, that could even be a very low number. But then you get into the, I guess, qualifications or the jurisdiction review process with this appeals commission and the de novo review. And I am not an attorney, and I will not sit here and debate the pros and cons, other than I've gone back, pulled Black's law dictionary. I do understand what the de novo review process would do here. In essence, you have a hearing officer who sits with a panel a hearing officer under this bill that is now required to be a member of the Alaska Bar Association, a hearing officer who has background in nothing but workers' compensation, supposedly years of experience, taking a case that has been appealed, that's whether it's an injured worker or an insurance company, to an appeals commission. The members of this commission, while they are required to be members of the Alaska Bar also, they are required 5 years' experience as a practicing attorney with experience in workers' comp. And I would argue that you probably have your hearing officers with more expertise in workers' comp law and hearing those cases than potentially you will with the politically appointed commission process. So to allow this commission de novo review of a decision that's been appealed by a board does not, at least from our perspective, make any logical sense at all. And you still have, even if you kept this commission, I mean, our suggestion would be to get rid of the commission. We believe that there have been some very positive changes with respect to the hearing officer, to the panel as it stands itself. We do not believe that there's a need at this point for a commission. You continue utilizing your superior court with, of course, the last resort being the Supreme Court. If that is not acceptable, if this committee decides that there is state funding available in upwards of $1 million, that there is support for adding this additional layer of bureaucracy to state government, then we would ask that the committee at least consider removing the de novo review from the commission. And with that, I will summarize my testimony by simply stating we do not believe the bill in its current form is good for injured workers out there or for those of us sitting around this table that are employers as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's take a brief at ease. Mr. Lozanke, if you could rejoin us, please. Would like to begin?
I'll begin, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, for the record, please.
For the record, my name is Scott Nordstrand. I'm the Deputy Attorney General for the Civil Division of the Department of Law. I'm joined here by Director Paul Lozanke of the Division of Workers' Compensation in the Department of Labor. There has been a lot of testimony here about how we got to this bill, the good, the bad, the ugly of the bill, according to those who are speaking. And I want to talk about the process, frankly, that we've gone through to get to this committee substitute, because I think there's been some misimpressions left about agreements that were made with regard to this bill. We began the process by drafting a bill in response to the increasing workers' compensation rate costs and the necessity of extracting more funds for the guarantee fund because of the Fremont collapse. So it was charged with the Department of Law, the Department of Labor, and the Division of Insurance. Can you come up with some good ideas to try to improve the workers' compensation system that could ultimately reduce rates and costs to employer and without affecting, hopefully, any kinds of the benefits and services that are available to injured workers? So that left us with, I mean, there's really only two choices if you're going to try to reduce costs in the workers' compensation system. Otherwise, in one hand, you've got to try to improve the system in some way, make it more efficient, make it more predictable, so insurance companies can have a greater understanding of what rates they need to charge, that sort of thing. Make the system predictable, responsible, reasonable. The alternative to that is simply to cut benefits. That was the other thing we looked at. I mean, that's a good way to cut workers' compensation costs. For example, medical payments, $106 million in the last year that was reported, I believe, something like that. The medical payment rates could simply be cut by administrative regulation by the Workers' Compensation Board. Now, that would have all kinds of consequences that are unforeseen, and we chose to simply make a benefit-neutral bill. That's what this is, benefit-neutral with exception of that one COLA provision for out-of-state residents. We went through this process, and we submitted the bill, and we were asked by representatives of labor and management to participate in the ad hoc committee process you've heard about. The ad hoc committee did in fact meet, did in fact deliberate on the original SB 311, and came to conclusions. And you have that letter in your packet. Here it is. And here's what the ad hoc committee, which was signed, the letter's signed by Kevin Doherty, who you've heard testimony from. I think his testimony was something to the effect that the ad hoc committee process was not used. In fact, this is the product of the ad hoc committee. You can see that, number one, they agreed that the ad hoc committee had never dealt with these issues before, that is, procedural issues. That was our position, but we were happy to participate in the ad hoc process. But both labor and management agreed that this had never been brought, this kind of issue had never been brought to the ad hoc committee before. They also then agreed, they had reached agreement on sections of the bill. Two most important. First, placing some administrative responsibilities in the division director. They agreed to that. Good idea. Secondly, and this may be surprising to you given the testimony you've heard here, replacing the Superior Court with an appeals commission. That was, the committee reached agreement on the sections of the bill that refer to replacing the Superior Court with an appeals commission. Signing this document were representatives of management, including, and then representatives of labor. Kevin Doherty represented on this committee, Barbara Huff Tuckness on this committee, John Juki on this committee. That was an agreement that was reached. This is a March 5 letter. Senator Bundy, I think you'll recall that was presented to your committee when the bill was passed out. That...
Just a moment, please. Senator Olson has a question.
On that point, was this a unanimous decision by everybody that was on the board, or was it...
As I understand it, it was. It was the agreement.
I understand the agreement, but I want to know if it was a unanimous decision by all people that were on the panel.
Since we were not asked to participate on the panel, we don't know what the vote
was. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
We do know that Kevin Doherty signed the letter. That we do know. So proceeding forward then, we learned that there were still problems. And the problem, primary problem that labor had with the bill at this point, having concluded this process, was the lay board members were being eliminated. Our original bill had hearing officers, professional hearing officers, to hear cases. Then it would go to the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission and then to the Supreme Court. The primary concern they had, or I guess were really twofold. One, the lay board members, and what about the composition of the hearing of the commission? Couldn't we balance that a little more? And so we agreed, the administration agreed, to sit down with representatives of labor, and we sat down for a series of several days of negotiations with Kevin Doherty, Barbara Huff Tuckness, Don Etheridge, Jim Robison, a former labor commissioner and member of the comp board, John Juki, who you've heard from here, and we sat down and tried to hammer out a compromise.
Excuse me, Mr. Nordstrand, I hear the bells ringing for the floor. I don't want to cut you off in mid-thought, but if we come to a good spot where we might, and then we'll just recess for an opportunity to continue the conversation.
I think it'd be fine. I could start the story of the negotiation when we continue. We could stop here if you'd like.
I have a question from Senator Hoffman before we...
Question. You said that one of the primary reasons was to address the increased cost, workman's cost rates. And that was the primary driving motive for the introduction of this legislation. So that we must... You must believe that you're going to have substantial reductions to go through this whole process. What is your anticipated workman's comp reduction?
We do not have a specific number, Senator. I don't think that a specific number is even possible to fathom.
And then if that's the case, and there may, and if they may not go down, would you be in support of, say, a sunset provision in this to be reviewed if they go up?
If they went up, I think the legislature should...
Or didn't go substantially down.
Mr. Hoffman, you want to let him finish his answer?
Yep.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, if this process doesn't result in a lowering of rates over time, if the participants in the system, labor, management, and the state, think that this needs to be revised in some way, I would encourage the legislature to take it up again. But I don't think that the uncertainty that, I mean, to have a system so important to workers, employers, and everyone else, that's sitting at risk for simply terminating at some point in time in the future, I think would be bad public policy. I think it would be good public policy, as provided in our bill, for there to be a report from the chair of the commission on an annual basis describing the success they've had in moving cases more quickly, what kind of results they've had. That's provided for in this bill. And the legislature absolutely should look at that report and determine whether there needs to be further adjustment. But I don't think the uncertainty of a sunset would help anyone in this.
We do are being called to the floor, so what we're going to do is recess to the call of the chair. In the event that unforeseen activities prevent us from getting back here this afternoon, just want to let you know, on Monday, in addition to the bills that I had mentioned earlier, SB 361 tobacco tax, SB 364 limit state aid for mental health care, SB 278 labor and workforce development fees, SB 231 decreased time to claim unclaimed property, and HB 347 the vehicle rental tax bill will be also on the agenda for Monday. Senator Hoffman.
Just one comment. As a businessman, I don't think I'm worried about the uncertainty. I'm worried that on this legislation, I'm more worried about the costs. You know, that was the intent of trying to address those increased costs, and I would be concerned if those costs didn't go down, you know, and the uncertainty aspects wouldn't bother me as a businessman. I'm worried about the bottom line. Thank you.
And this might be the appropriate committee to discuss the bottom line. So we'll stand at recess to the call of the chair.
Senate Finance will come back to order. We have decided to continue the hearing on Senate Bill 311 today, as time got compressed somewhat this morning, and there were some other people who wished to testify. We're still joined by Senator Hoffman, Senator Bundy, Senator Stevens, and myself, Senator Green. And there's some folks online who wish to give testimony, and I'll kind of go down the list to see if you're on for testimony, for additional testimony, or if you are here just standing by. Chancey Croft. Did you wish to testify this afternoon?
Yes, he does.
Go right ahead, Chancey.
One moment, please. Mr. Croft is right here.
Thank you.
Thank you. I had to step out for just a minute. I've been waiting. Is the committee back in session now?
Yes, we are.
I want Welcome. To talk about several things here, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify. If anybody has any questions, I hope they'll go ahead and interrupt and ask them. But I think this is a very important bill, not just for its specific implications as far as workers' compensation, but also because of what impact it's going to have on the judiciary. Alaska has debated the type of judiciary that is appropriate, and it was a heated topic at the Constitutional Convention. And what Alaska adopted was a unified court system, so that there weren't separate rules that applied to one court or a different court, but that all courts operated under the same rules, and that there was a unified authority for the handling of cases, so that if one district had a light caseload and another district had a heavy caseload, that could be adjusted by the administration of the courts. It adopted a system like New Jersey had, which had one of the most cumbersome and costly court systems at the time of the Constitutional Convention, but had recently reorganized into one that was noted for its efficiency. And so that's what we have here. And we also have a non-politicized court. The judges are not elected, and that was a subject of debate at the Constitutional Convention. They are appointed by the governor, but only from people determined most qualified by the Judicial Council. And this bill departs from that basic premise for the first time in the state's history. There is another court besides the court system. It is the tax court in the Department of Revenue and is a special court because it handles confidential matters. But the people on that court are referred to as judges, and they are selected by the governor only from a list of people who have been determined to be the most qualified, not just barely qualified, but by the most qualified by the Judicial Council. And this bill creates an appeals tribunal without calling it a court, but gives it more power, actually, than the Superior Court has, and has people sitting on that tribunal that are not called judges, but are act as judges, have more power than, and either as much or more power than judges, and yet are not determined even qualified, much less the most qualified, by the Judicial Council. It is the worst solution to a problem that does not exist. It's the worst solution because at the Constitutional Convention there was considerable debate between having our modified Missouri plan of selecting judges or the election of judges, but nobody suggested at the Constitutional Convention just let the governor appoint his friends or relatives or whatever to the court without a determination that they were highly qualified. And so I think that's a real mistake. The justification for this is to bring predictability and uniformity to board decisions. And there is simply no problem in that regard. I practiced since 1979, when the voters determined that what Alaska needed was another workers' compensation attorney instead of somebody to be governor. And my practice has been almost exclusively in front of the Workers' Compensation Board and the Supreme Court appealing workers' compensation cases, and I've had some 50 cases in the Supreme Court. And to the best of my knowledge, the only case in which the Supreme Court has ever said there are differing opinions between panels of the Work Comp Board, one panel said this, another panel said that, was a case that occurred in Shirley. It occurred 10 years ago this year, and it was over a kind of a esoteric question involving the Social Security Act and the Alaska Workers' Compensation Act. Other than that, I don't know where there's ever been a case that was important enough to go to the Supreme Court to resolve decisions, conflicts between two boards. But if there is a conflict, you don't have to create a whole new court system. You don't have to hire a dozen or more state employees, spend $750,000 or $1 million to create a new bureaucracy. All of the hearing officers at the board level serve at the pleasure, they're representatives of the Commissioner of Labor. And the Commissioner of Labor can simply say to his hearing officers, I'm not going to tell you how to decide the cases factually, but I'm simply going to tell you if there is legal precedent by the Superior Court, you follow that precedent until it's changed by another Superior Court or by the Supreme Court, and you would have that uniformity. But it has not been a problem in Alaska. It just is simply a problem that does not exist, and it reminds me of what, I don't know whether Senator Bundy is there, but I testified at the first committee hearing on this bill and mentioned that this reminded me of what another senator used to accuse me of doing when I was in the Senate, doing unprovoked good. This happens to be unprovoked bad because it is going to delay justice. It's going to delay resolution of claims for injured workers. And somebody might ask, well, wait a minute, if the tribunal can have a trial de novo, why is that any different than the Superior Court doing a trial de novo? And the simple answer is, Superior Courts don't do trial de novos.
There are states, Texas did that for a while, where the court, where it was a court trial, but that's never been the case in Alaska. I know of one case where the Superior Court granted a hearing de novo, and the Supreme Court reversed the Superior Court decision in a workers' compensation case. The decision by the Superior Court and the Supreme Court is simply to determine whether the board's decision are supported by substantial evidence. And if they are supported by substantial evidence, the court has to accept the board's decision. That's in the present law now. It's in AS 2330-122, which says that the findings of the board, that the board has the sole power to determine the credibility of a witness. A finding by the board concerning the weight to be accorded a witness testimony, including medical testimony and reports, is conclusive, even if the evidence is conflicting or susceptible to contrary conclusions. The findings of the board are subject to the same standard of review as a jury's finding in a civil action. Now, that section of the law has been around for almost a quarter of a century. It was passed by the legislature in 1982. It was passed, not at my request, not at labor's request, but at the request of the business community. So, because the business community wanted some finality to board decision, and they didn't want a court to simply say, well, we're kind of sympathetic to this injured worker, so we're going to reweigh the evidence. So that has produced finality. That is why there are so few appeals from board decisions, because that has been the standard. And in that regard, I think it's important to keep in mind that Superior Court now handles all of the appeals from the board decision without any increased cost. Well, how does that happen? Because there's only about 30 or 40 appeals of board decisions to the Superior Court on an annual basis. There are 30 to 40 Superior Court judges. So if the court, this unified court system, can allocate these cases among the judges and say to a particular judge, it may be in Anchorage or Kodiak or Bethel or Valdez or whatever, you had a big trial that had been scheduled, but now that's been canceled and somebody else has a big trial that they didn't anticipate, will you handle these workers' compensation appeals? And on average, a Superior Court judge only has to handle one workers' compensation appeal a year, and so they can work it in to their schedule. And yet, if you take it away, if you take away the authority or the obligation of the Superior Court to do it, there's not going to be any savings. So right now, all of this is being done for free. The bill simply imposes a cost that is not necessary and violates the entire spirit of the Constitutional Convention. Now, it's hard to get a handle on exactly what other states have done, but I think that if there was a review of other states' laws, that, as I understand it, there is only one state that would have a situation where you go from a board hearing to an administrative tribunal reviewing the board decision, and then directly to the Supreme Court. All of the other states, I believe, except possibly Hawaii, have an intermediate appellate court, like we do. And so the system that we have now is much more similar to what the other states are doing than the one that this bill envisions. Why am I concerned about this? I only represent injured workers. Because if you get two bites at the apple, then you are going to have delay. If you can go and ask the appeals tribunal to give you a new hearing, to reweigh all of the evidence, that's a and they can grant stays, and the decisions of the board aren't final, that's going to cause delays for injured workers. Our system only works well if our system works promptly. There was a study in Maine 20 years ago which showed that
when there's a delay in determining whether people are entitled to compensation. A lot of people have to go on, have to borrow from friends and relatives. They have to go on welfare. They may file for bankruptcy. They may lose their home. It impacts their family. But when all is said and done and they finally get to go to a hearing, 80% of the time they win. And so what I'm worried about here is that there's going to be delay. There are some good provisions in this bill, the keeping the guarantee association solvent, sections 1 through 7 are a good idea. The penalty for employers that don't have insurance is a good idea. Elevating the pay of the hearing officers is a good idea. There was a provision in the bill, it's on page 8, that says all three of the members of the hearing board have to be present to have a hearing. That's a good idea, but it's a bad idea as it's worded, because the Administrative Procedures Act in section 600 and 635 allows for teleconference participation by board members. So if you can't get into Juneau because of the weather, or even what's happened before in cases where I've gone to Juneau for a hearing, the board member from Ketchikan can't even get out of Ketchikan, much less into Juneau. The person could participate by teleconference. But for some reason, the Attorney General's office left out the reference to those two sections in the Administrative Procedures Act, and that is certainly going to be more delay and more cost, because there are just too many times that that all three of the members can't get together. Having them all participate is great. Not allowing them to participate telephonically is going to mean delay and increased cost. Some question about how fair the present board has been. There are statistics. I don't think the Department of Labor has presented you those statistics, but there are internal statistics with the Department of Labor that show that in over 40% of the cases, the board's decision in the last few years have been in favor of the employer. So this is not some system in which there's anything out of whack about the fairness of it. As a matter of fact, the three longest-serving members, I'm pretty sure is correct, and I know it's absolutely correct for two of them, three of the longest-serving members on the Workers' Compensation Board, Steve Hagedorn, Phil Ulmer, and Mark Stemp, all are management members, and all of them were originally appointed by a Republican governor, Walter Hickel. So there isn't any partisanship, there isn't any unfairness, there isn't any bias on the present board that needs to be addressed. I could talk more about this. I don't know whether there are any questions that anybody might have.
Well, I had just had a question. You were talking about the limitation on that they had to be present. And which line were you referring to on page 8?
It says on line 14 and 15, a hearing may not proceed in the absence of a board member. So it means you have to have the entire hearing panel there. Now, that's different from what is done with regard to this appeals commission, because on page 9, on line 17 and 18, it says a majority of the members of the commission constitute a quorum. So two of the three members could decide to grant a stay or to have a trial de novo, or even conduct a de novo hearing without the third member even. But as far as the hearing panel is concerned, you have to have all of them there. That's a good idea.
Yes, sir.
In a later section of the bill, where it talks about the board's hearing, it lists the provisions of the Administrative Procedures Act that actually apply to the board, and that's on page 36, lines 12 through 14, but it stops with 4462590. It should be added 600 and 635. Now, let me mention one other thing when we're, as long as we're talking about technical problems with this bill. Right now, if anybody that wants to settle their claim, if you want to waive your rights, if you want to get payment but you're going to give up something, any agreement like that has to be approved by the Workers' Compensation Board. It's done to protect injured workers. And it's a good idea to require that because some 30% of injured workers, even the ones that go to a hearing, are not represented by an attorney. Despite what you might have heard, this isn't highly lucrative. I mean, there's reasons for doing it, and I'm delighted to do it, and those of us that represent employees, we do it because we believe in it, and